Since the dawn of recorded history, mankind has been obsessed with his bollocks. Bollocks. Bollocks.
Even the most casual glance at a newspaper stand this week would have endowed you with the knowledge of Warner Brothers' recent evangelical conversion to Blu-ray and consequential ditching of HD DVD.
I am a robot. Tech news.
This signals the end of the format wars and will probably cause a boost to PS3 sales over the coming months. I was firmly entrenched in the HD DVD camp a year ago because despite Blu-ray's on-paper capacity advantage, it struck me as the far superior format as far as consumer freedom was concerned. The Blu-ray standard suffers from an overemphasis on restrictive digital rights management, while HD DVD didn't seem quite so paranoid, and its lack of region coding was a definite plus. Differences in picture quality are negligible at these sorts of bitrates, and HD DVD had the potential to be a lot cheaper, due to the fact that it's much easier to manufacture in existing disc plants. And lastly, but perhaps most importantly, it doesn't have a stupid name. However, at some point in 2007, I simply got fed up with the whole format war, wishing one of them would become a clear winner so we could all move on with our lives, and finally dump the increasingly archaic DVD standard. I'm sure I wasn't the only one. So, well done, Sony. You won the disc war, but don't lay down your arms just yet, because the next home video revolution is going to do away with tactile media altogether. At least that's the opinion of Apple CEO Steve Jobs, who remarked in a recent interview with CNBC that Blu-ray might have won, but nobody's going to care when they're getting all their HD content over the internet. As much as it pains me to do so, I completely agree. Jobs' comments came unsurprisingly after he'd unveiled the new iTunes movie rental service and its companion device, the new and improved Apple TV, during his recent keynote speech at the Macworld 2008 Expo. He also unveiled the brand new MacBook Air, which carries the distinction of being the thinnest laptop ever created, being just 3/4 inch at its thickest point. Even more impressive is the fact that they've managed to cram in a 1.8 GHz Core 2 Duo processor. Now, I know Intel chips are quite efficient these days, but I'd still love to know how the hell they're keeping the thing from melting through the casing. Anyway, enough about that company.
Tellywank.
Fans of Doctor Who will undoubtedly find themselves watching the new series of Torchwood, probably against their better judgment.
Torchwood. Outside the government, beyond the police. Fighting for the future on behalf of the human race.
It's certainly the case as far as I'm concerned. Frankly, I wasn't expecting to be even the slightest bit entertained, and my primary reason for watching is the pathetic and irrational desire not to miss any references to its parent show. The complete and utter shitness of Torchwood's first series was helped in no small part by the fact that the principal characters are an assortment of boring, unlikable fuckheads, except, of course, for the lovable Captain Jack, an immortal, sex-obsessed ex-con man from the future who probably struggled to appreciate the interpersonal differences between a handshake and a cock in the mouth. These things, at the very least, seem to have changed. The two episodes we've seen so far are a vast improvement on the year before, and I couldn't quite figure out why until I realised that for the first time ever, I was able to watch the Torchwood crew, besides Jack, go about their business without feeling the compulsion to smash my television in with my own face.
Thirsty now.
The first episode, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, featured the introduction of Captain John, a contemporary of Captain Jack's from the 51st century, and something of a yin to his yang. Captain John is an equally sex-obsessed con man from the future, who'd probably struggle to appreciate the interpersonal differences between a friendly passing smile and an evening of vigorous activity resulting in a bleeding anus. The first meeting between the two establishes that they have a bit of history, and a passionate mano-a-mano kiss quickly turns into an epic one-on-one bar fight that ends in a heavy drinking session. It's essentially Brokeback Mountain condensed into 3 minutes, and it pretty much sets the tone for the rest of the episode, which was rather good, by the way, right up until the ridiculously paradoxical reset button ending.
What the hell?
Jack, what's going on? Why has it gone dark?
The rest reverted to the moment he came through. Everything's jumped back to the beginning of the night.
Like you were never here.
Now we got to avoid ourselves. Great.
There have been so many nonsensically crap conclusions in the Doctor Who universe lately that I'm wondering if they're all somehow linked to an upcoming franchise-wide story arc in which God himself writes the universe into a corner, prompting the Doctor to point his sonic screwdriver at something shiny and ambiguous that somehow crumples up and discards the last 5 pages of existence and gives the Almighty a chance to think up a proper ending that doesn't suck balls. Unfortunately, that's far too clever and self-referential an idea for Russell T. Davis to come up with, and it's difficult to get emotionally invested in the events of a television show run by a writer with a now-established track record of erasing entire episodes' worth of on-screen events with reckless abandon. As if the reset button is such a clever idea that he has to use it to wrap up every season finale that dribbles from his fat fucking fingers. Seriously, what is this man's problem? Does he like Star Trek Voyager that much? Can he not find a better show to pilfer ideas from? Cock.
The work we do, the person I am now, that's what I'm proud of.
Then why did you desert us?
It was an enjoyable, if predictable, romp that left me thinking that if they can at least uphold this level of quality for the rest of the year, it'll be a more than worthy addition to the Doctor Who canon, something which honestly cannot be said about the first series, or Kylie Minogue's acting. It was with unexpected excitement, then, that I sat down to watch Episode 2, hoping and praying to insert metaphorical supreme being of your choice that last week wasn't a blip. Fortunately, my hopes were not in vain. Episode 2, Sleeper, is some good Torchwood. Now, I'm not sure if that means it's good TV, or if it just seems that way when compared to other Torchwood, but I definitely find myself enjoying it for what it was. Despite sharing some thematic similarities with certain episodes of New Battlestar Galactica, the episode plays like a cross between Terminator 2 and The Bill.
Okay, Beth, you make light bulbs blow. We can't break your skin. What planet are you from?
Earth.
Stop wasting our time. We know you're an alien.
There's a hard-as-nails, battle-ready alien task force ready to take over the Earth and enslave the human race. Up until now, they've been living in Cardiff rather peacefully and thinking they're perfectly human until one day one of them goes mental and maims a burglar. This gets the attention of Torchwood, who haul the offending alien slimeball away for interrogation. Trouble is, the perp herself still has no idea she's a scum-sucking extraterrestrial dirtbag, so it takes a bit of torture to get her to reveal her true nature. Captain Jack feels this terrible treatment of their prisoner is entirely justified and necessary, much to the horror of the rest of the team, who by now really should be used to this sort of thing. It was a bit hard to accept John Barrowman in full-on meanie hard-ass mode, but that might just be a side effect of his many appearances in shows like How'd You Solve a Problem Like Maria? Incidentally, the Doctor Who universe already provided a solution to that little dilemma.
Extermination!
They spend a lot of time exploring the tragic duality of this Beth character in a surprisingly mature way. Unfortunately, this is rather too familiar territory for the genre, and it was trodden to perfection relatively recently in the aforementioned Battlestar Galactica by writers who are frankly far more talented than the bloke who wrote Severance. Eventually, the rest of the bottom-dwelling, shit-eating Martian cohorts transmogrify into their alien selves and start wreaking havoc around the city of Cardiff, the city of dreams, the city of Stellar Artois with Bacardi Breezer chasers. And this is when it becomes less Terminator 2 and more Confessions of a Psychotic Volvo Driver. If you've seen it, you'll know what I mean. The villains are about as menacing as a jar of pickled gherkins, being as they are a pram-driving chavette, an hilariously muscular paramedic, and a man who looks, sounds, and acts like a suburban geography teacher. Scary. This isn't a convincing alien killing machine.
I'm afraid I must maim you. Apologies.
This is a Volvo-driving, middle-class alien-killing machine.
I find these traffic-calming measures most inconvenient. Are you a fan of James Blunt?
This isn't just television. This is laughable crap.
Vote conservative! Vote conservative!
What starts off as a thoroughly decent episode quickly nosedives into a mess of B-movie horror and campy action. The last 20 minutes is made bearable by some deliciously unexpected comic relief from Yanto Jones and Owen Harper, two characters that seem to have had a dose of emergency-like ability at some point since the last series, especially the latter, who thankfully is no longer trying to force his penis into any suitable container at every possible opportunity. Mind you, just when I thought they were going to manage an entire episode without alluding to the collision of genitals, he drops this.
Let's all have sex.
Ugh, God. Despite this episode's descent into downright silliness, the trend certainly seems to be up. If Torchwood keeps improving at this rate, then I'm confident that by episode 6, it'll be almost enjoyable with the help of recreational drugs.
Gratis Game Zores.
If you're anything like me, the commercial onslaught that is Christmas will have left you with a heavy gut, but a depressingly light bank balance. So, as promised,
Jim's Bag of Bollocks presents
Ways to keep yourselves amused for free. Well, mostly free, apart from the associated utility bills, but basically free.
For the purposes of the segment, it's no secret to anyone that there are hundreds of thousands of legitimately free games out on the internet for anyone to enjoy. In fact, there are so many that sifting through them to find the good ones can feel a bit laborious. The best examples, in my experience, are point-and-click adventure games, a genre that's going through something of a renaissance these days, what with brand new titles like Zack and Wiki on the Wii appearing on game store shelves alongside the latest installments in fan-favourite franchises like Broken Sword 4 and Dreamfall. Anyway, I expect you all know of Ben Yahtzee Croshaw. Remember, I talked about his brilliant game review series Zero Punctuation a few episodes back.
As I progressed through the starting village, a set of red flags came up that brought me to a sinister realisation. One-click combat, endless trudging from place to place, quests involving killing X amount of monster Y for lazy stationary cockhead Z. This is a Memorpaga! A single-player Memorpaga with no alliance dipshits teabagging your corpse, but a Memorpaga nonetheless.
By the way, if you don't tune into that every Wednesday by now, punch yourself in the face repeatedly until you draw blood. He's also applied his genius to a scripting language called Adventure Game Studio, and with it he's created a slew of games that are well worth anyone's attention, that is, anyone with more than three neurons to rub together. I'd like to talk specifically about 5 Days a Stranger, a compelling adventure in which you play a self-styled gentleman thief called Trilby, who while on a job gets trapped by an unknown intelligence inside the Defoe Estate, a large, apparently empty mansion. He shares this exquisitely furnished prison with four other characters who struggle not to get killed by a rampaging ghost while you unravel a century-old murder mystery that becomes key to your own survival. It's a tiny download, less than 2 meg, so there's no voice acting to speak of, the music's all MIDI, and the graphics are, well, not as elaborate as our modernizer used to, put it that way. But it's positively dripping with atmosphere and has a great storyline that's told with incredibly well-written dialogue. He's also made a number of sequels and spin-offs, so if you're an adventure game fan, you're doing yourself a great disservice by giving it a miss. Download it now, you fucks. It can be found at www.fullyramblematic.com. Also, you might not be aware that Revolution Software, creators of the Broken Sword series, released two of their earliest games as freeware a few years back. Lure of the Temptress and Beneath a Steel Sky can be downloaded from www.scumvm.org. That's S-C-U-M-M-V-M.org. Beneath a Steel Sky is an absolute classic, and the version available is the full talkie CD version that's been compressed for use with the ScumVM engine. If that means nothing to you, then the website will explain everything. User-made modifications or mods are another avenue to explore for gaming on the cheap. Some games have huge modding communities associated with them. Half-Life 2, for example, has a huge selection of user-made multiplayer maps, skins, and even lengthy single-player campaigns available to download from many community websites. One of the most prolific modder collectives is that of the Elder Scrolls series.
Oh, for Christ's sake, what is it now? He's talking about that game again.
Oh, leave the boy alone, man.
Can he not get through one episode without fucking mentioning Oblivion?
Oh, you're doing me head and woman, just leave him be now.
Any kind of addition to the world of Tamriel you can think of. There are loads of small add-ons like new armour and clothing, weapons, shields and items. It could even be an amusing set of books to read, along with an in-game library to read them in. More ambitious modifications include new characters and quest lines, written by people who are such passionate fans of the series that they often fit in seamlessly with the existing content. Some even attempt to create entirely new cities to explore, or even landmasses. The most popular Oblivion mod is Oscuro's Oblivion Overhaul, a fairly large and impressive work which seeks to address many of the vanilla game's biggest problems. Many people, including to an extent myself, had issues with the game's approach to dynamic leveling. Every time your character levels up and consequently increases their stats, the rest of the game world levels up with them, almost removing the whole point of leveling up in the first place and greatly hampering any sense of progression. Oscuro's Oblivion Overhaul, or OOOH if you want an acronym, changes all that. It dramatically alters the leveling system and dicks about with everything else to do with the skill stats. But that's boring nerd talk. Basically, it makes the game a bit harder and a bit more rewarding. It also adds a lot of new and exciting content like new quests, new factions, new NPCs, and the artificial intelligence has been played with to be a bit more realistic. I'd be exaggerating if I said it was like playing a new game. It's still at its heart the same Oblivion, same guilds, same questlines, but the dynamics of the world and the rules that govern it are subtly altered. It makes more involved combat strategies possible. For example, it's now doable, nay necessary, to play angry creatures against each other. Instead of engaging a minotaur head-on, why not let it chase you into a pack of wolves, then let them maim it while you pelt the fucker with arrows from a safe distance? Okay, so it's not deep strategy, but it's got a bit more depth than Twat It Till It Dies. It certainly breathed new life into a game that I felt I'd played to death. Now I have the old quest to look forward to again, and the brand new content to savour. Best of all, it cost me nothing but about half a gig of bandwidth. Of course, there are hundreds of other modifications for Oblivion, and indeed other games too, and I clearly don't have enough time to list them here, so I'll put some links up on the blog page for anyone who's interested. Endgame. Well, we come to the end of the first 2008 show. Just a couple of things before I sign off. The prick won't be contributing to the podcast anymore. If that leaves you distraught and ready to self-harm, then do so. I think he's planning to do his own podcast, so good luck to him. Also, without being a wanker about it, rest in peace, Heath Ledger. And fuck Tom Cruise.
Bollocks. Bollocks.
For further information and links associated with the topics covered in this episode, why not visit the blog page at www.bagofbollocks.co.uk. I'll be back in 2 weeks with Shriveled Up, where hopefully I'll be reviewing Zack and Wiki on the Wii. If you like the show, tell your friends, get them to subscribe. The more, the merrier. See ya!
Bollocks. Bollocks. Bollocks.